Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Sunday, July 11th, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. Sorry for being away for the past week. Title of today's podcast, Food Prices, Hunger, and Jobless Claims. Now, we have missed a lot of economic news and political news over the past couple of weeks. There's much to get to. I have said this, I know, for the past couple of weeks, but I do believe that my schedule is going to start calming down a little bit, which is going to be a good thing, which hopefully gives me more time to get back to doing these podcasts. I'm not going to promise that it's going to be daily, but I hope to get a few out this week to at least get caught up on a lot of that economic data that has been coming across the wires over the past couple of weeks, because there's a lot to digest and a lot to discuss. But ultimately, I think the direction of all of this news remains the same. This is a stagflationary environment. End of story. Yes, there are those who are in the quote-unquote deflationist camp who think that prices are going to come down. Now, for some goods and services, that may very well be the case. But it's not because of what deflation actually is, which would be a decrease in the money supply. What they mean by deflation, of course, is the effects of what would take place in a deflationary environment, and that's lower prices. Now, we may see lower prices in some goods and services, but that's going to be due to the effects of supply and demand. And I'm not going to disagree with them. My main focus here, and I have been very, very consistent on this since the beginning, is my focus on those goods and services that you need to live. The goods and services that you need to live. That is where my focus lies. And with respect to those goods and services, prices are going to continue marching upward. Because we are in such an inflationary environment with no end in sight. Because we continue to print money like it's going out of style, because it is. That is inflation by definition. The effects of inflation are those higher prices. Now, on the gadgets and gizmos that nobody really needs, they want them, but they don't really need them. Yeah, we might see some prices falling there. I don't care about that crap. Yes, it's going to impact jobs here and there. Obviously, people who are producing those things, if there's not as much demand, there's going to be an effect on that. But guess what? That feeds into my narrative, my belief of stagflation, where you have inflation coupled with a high jobless rate, high unemployment, and a stagnant economy. That's where we are. We are not out of the recession that we were in. Now, economists out there and politicians will claim, well, because of skyrocketing quote-unquote GDP here, this bogus made-up number now that they're coming up with, well, it's so high, 7, 8%, we have to be out of the recession. Yet if we have such high GDP growth, then why do we continue to print money to the degree that we are? Why print it at all? Why does the Federal Reserve continue to remain committed to purchasing at least $120 billion per month in U.S. Treasuries and mortgage-backed securities, despite the fact that housing prices are through the roof, with very little end in sight? And that's one of the economic data points that came across the wires last week. I'm not going to get to that today, but I hope to get to it later this coming week, because it's very important to discuss this topic, because it is a major talking point. It is something that is very important to millions and millions of Americans, because you got to live somewhere. And if you want to buy a house, are you going to be able to afford it? Can you? Is there even a chance? Can you come up with a down payment? Do you want to risk purchasing a house almost sight unseen or not having an inspection? Because if you have an inspection, it's going to take too much time and somebody's going to come in and say, hey, we don't care. We have cash. Well, who has the cash? It's Blackstone. It's BlackRock. Financial firms. It's pension funds, it's hedge funds, because they're close to the printing press. They get to reap the quote-unquote benefits of inflation because they get that funny money first. And they can go out and they can actually purchase assets with it. This is like winning at the casino. You're playing with house money. If you lose it, you really didn't lose it. You understand? Because it wasn't yours to begin with. So they don't care what the price is. They just want the asset. This is part of the Great Reset. This is the you will own nothing and you will like it. And if you listen to that statement, you will own nothing. Well, what do you think that sounds like? Does that sound like an inflationary environment to you where prices keep going up? You can't afford it. You will own nothing because you can't afford it. Or does that sound like a deflationary environment where prices just keep dropping, where things would get more affordable? Oh, I know what it sounds like. It sounds like the former. It sounds like a very inflationary environment because that's exactly what it is. This is not tinfoil hat conspiracy theory crap. This is the Great Reset. This is the World Economic Forum. This is in their press releases. This is in their marketing material. You will own nothing and you will like it. And they want to keep us distracted with all of the crap that they throw at us on Fox News, on MSNBC, on CNN, NBC, all of them. It's the divide and conquer tactic. It's the divide and conquer strategy. And they utilize it because it works. The powers that be want us, the people, fighting amongst ourselves. They do not want us paying attention to the men and women behind the curtain. Because what they're doing is they are running away with all the money. They are stealing it. And they are doing it right in front of us. But they want to distract us by calling us racist. And it's infuriating. And it's troubling. And it's upsetting. And I get it. But you have to stop listening to it. You have to stop paying attention to it. You're not a racist. You know you're not a racist. But that's why you get upset, because people are calling you racist for no reason whatsoever. And you say enough's enough. You dig in. You buy into the culture wars and all this crap that they throw at us. They're doing it because they want us fighting amongst ourselves. Meanwhile, they can go around printing money, reaping all the benefits of it, buying up real assets, purchasing stocks, purchasing bonds, purchasing commodities, purchasing real estate. Meanwhile, people are still starving to death around the world. People are still sick and dying. People are homeless. People don't have enough food, etc., etc. It's a sick society. And it's right in front of us. You want to get upset at the Republicans? You want to get upset at the Democrats? I get it. But where you really have to focus your efforts and your energy is on these central banks, is on the powers that be that are pulling the strings, that are allowing these banks, these major corporations, to get away with what they're getting away with. That's where you have to focus your energy, not on your next door neighbor. And not on these idiotic political parties. Yeah, if you want to focus on them, dissolve them. That's where you focus your energy. If you want to focus on the political parties, you dissolve them. You stop voting for these people. They do not care about you. Period. End of story. We haven't talked about the U.S. debt clock for a while, but it's at $28.5 trillion. They don't care about you, folks. They don't care about you. I have 28.5 trillion pieces of evidence in my corner. What do you have? Some guy says something you agree with? Well, what does he do with it? Nothing. He makes you pay the bill. Very simple to connect these dots. And if you fast forward, and we haven't talked about this in a while either, but again, going to the usdebtclock.org, and they have their little time machine, and you can fast forward to where we will be in 4 years at current rates, and we will have a national debt of $51 trillion. Last time we talked about it, it was hovering around $50 trillion. So since then, it hasn't been that long, it's gone up an additional $1 trillion to $51 trillion. I mean, it's getting close to a doubling from where we are now, only 4 years from now. And what are we going to have to show for it? Absolutely nothing. Do you think our infrastructure is going to be the best in the world? No, it's not going to be. Do you think it should be? Yeah, of course it should be the best in the world. This is supposed to be the greatest country ever. And we have crumbling infrastructure coast to coast. And it's going to pretty much, unfortunately, remain that way for quite a while. And don't forget, there's other concerns with respect to infrastructure that we highlighted in the American Society of Civil Engineers report card that we discussed several months ago, where they highlighted something that I think is very crucial. And with respect to water treatment plants and other types of infrastructure, where you have these facilities, obviously, where many, many people are employed, there is a lack of interest on the part of young people to take these jobs. This is mission critical here. This is crucial infrastructure. Water treatment, wastewater treatment plants, etc. You have an aging workforce. That's who works at these facilities. They're on the verge of retiring. There is not a replacement coming behind them. That is a very important news story that gets virtually no coverage at all. If younger people do not step up into these roles, what's going to happen? I mean, this stuff isn't just going to take care of itself. So that's something to be very mindful of. Okay? But I digress on that point. So some of the things, obviously, that I want to talk about are those food prices. We've gotten updates with world food prices. They've actually come down for the first time in the past year, but still at a 10-year high. So we're going to talk about how that is affecting one nation after the next, something that has unfortunately been a constant theme over the past year. And unfortunately, I think it will remain a theme throughout this year and probably well into next year as well, because of what we are seeing in many parts of the world due to conflict and due to weather. We have massive droughts in many parts of the world. And that is most definitely impacting and negatively affecting crop production. So that is clearly going to have an impact on food prices, as is transportation prices, which if you continue to look at overseas shipping rates, they're basically four times higher than where they were last year. Four times higher than where they were last year, and there is no sign of this stopping or letting up. Now, those prices are going to make their way to the consumer because these businesses are only going to be able to eat so much of that cost increase. Again, if they are going to attempt to cushion and protect their margins, what are they going to do? They're going to lay people off. So here you have it. You have your higher prices. To protect margins, they lay people off. Higher unemployment, higher prices, stagflationary environment, especially for the goods and services that we all need. And I haven't even talked about energy prices yet, and those are going to continue to go up too. As far as I'm concerned, that's what I think is going to happen. Because that's one of the remaining talking points out there from those who do not believe in this inflationary environment or believe that it is only transitory. Because when we talk about higher prices, higher food prices, higher energy prices, we go back to where we were 2011, 2012 with the Arab Spring and several other countries who were rioting and revolting against their countries because of the cost of living increases. We had oil prices back then at $100 a barrel. So people say today, well, oil isn't that hot, so clearly that's not going to happen. It already is happening. It was happening in 2019 before the pandemic. The Capital News was all over that because I understood that the global economy was slowing down. I understood that this was not the greatest economy that ever existed because I don't buy into the BS that is spewed from one politician's mouth, whether that's Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, Nancy Pelosi. I don't care who it is. I know how to read the data. I know how to read reality. And I don't need to sugarcoat it. It is what it is. If it's pretty, I'll tell you it's pretty. If it's ugly, I'll tell you it's ugly. It's that simple. My goal is the truth, how I see it. That should just be what it is. I'm not here to cater to the Republican or the conservative movement. I'm not here to cater to the Democrats and the progressive movement. It's not what this program is about. It's about getting to the heart of the story. It's about getting to the truth. It's about digging deep into the headlines and into the data to paint a picture. I wish things were better. They're not. And they're not going to get any better because the same people who have been in power are still in power, who have caused these problems and who are creating further problems. They're still there. They're still there. But as long as we continue to fight amongst ourselves over stupid stuff that the media makes us believe is important, and you still have your microwave dinner and football on, well, then guess what? They're going to continue to get away with murder. They're going to continue to get away with this fraud. With perhaps they're going to continue to get away with what may very well be deemed the crime, not of the century, but of the millennium. That's how big this is. This is trillions and trillions of dollars. And not only is it just the money, but it's the breakdown of society. It's the crumbling of the United States of America. That's important. That's a big statement. And all of this is happening at the same time. And a lot of people don't care because a lot of people are riding this inflationary wave. People feel great. Their 401ks are up. Other retirement accounts are up. Their brokerage accounts are up. I mean, my goodness, the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average all hit all-time highs on Friday. Even though earlier in the week, there was a back-to-back sell-off because everybody got concerned that the economy was going to start slowing down. And then, whoa, a couple days later, next day later, Friday, they rally and make all-time highs. And you get headlines from the likes of Yahoo News, which is really Yoohoo News, because that's who these people are, a bunch of Yoohoos, coming out and saying, the markets rally today because the markets are dismissing any economic weakness. They don't care. Oh, just like that. Boom. Just like that. But what's the real reason? Well, it's because the Federal Reserve continues to expand their balance sheet. It's because the ECB, the European Central Bank, continues to expand their balance sheet. It's because the People's Bank of China cut their interest rates. It's because the Bank of Japan, the governor speaks up again and says, oh, well, if we have to, we're going to continue to prime the press over here as well. You understand? There is no economy globally. It is shot. They are keeping this entire system afloat on easy money. End of story. There's no economic recovery. And there isn't going to be for a long, long time. They've guaranteed it with the policies that they have enacted. We went over this in great detail last year. Last year, when we were all over this, totally against these bailouts from the get-go. I have it on the podcast. I have it on my website. I have it in writing. I have letters sent to my congressmen, to my senators. Dead set against this before it even got started. This is why. Because I saw this happening. And they've, of course, they've taken it even further than what I thought they were going to do. So all that tells me is they're going to continue to go even further. They have stolen so much future growth and prosperity, it's not even funny. They have created so many zombie corporations, it's not even funny. They continue to prop up one zombie corporation after the next. That saturates future growth. It stunts future growth. It prevents future growth and prosperity. And at the same time, they've destroyed small business. So what do you get? You get exactly what they want. What do they want? They want power. They want control. They want consolidation. And they're getting all of it. you will own nothing, and you will like it. And when you understand that that's the goal, you can understand their sick and twisted and evil mindset, and then you can understand why what is happening is happening. It starts to make sense. And as soon as you start to accept the fact that these people don't care about you, well, then it really all really comes together and makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it? They don't care about you. And that's what it comes down to. So some market performance here. We have the dollar index at 92.10 to close out the week. 92.10. Bitcoin is currently at $34,000 a coin, and it has been hovering around this range for quite a while. Even some supporters of Bitcoin, for what it's worth, think that it could really go down to 10,000. I mean, it should go to zero as far as I'm concerned. It's not Bitcoin, it's Bitcoin. But we'll see what happens. Before it gets to zero, it could hit six figures. You know, you don't know which way it's going to go. But it's definitely something that should not be getting as much attention as it gets. Again, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, NASDAQ, and S&P 500 all hitting all-time highs. On the commodity price front, we have WTI at $74.62, a barrel Brent at $75.57, natural gas $3.68, gasoline $2.29. So these energy prices continue to tick higher and higher, and I do imagine that oil will get close to $100 a barrel, if not hit it. You have a lot of major banks coming out and making these types of announcements and other market makers. So typically, when you hear this type of story with oil hitting $100, or any really almost any price point, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. That's not always true with other commodities or stocks or other asset prices, but for some reason, that tends to be the case with oil. It doesn't mean that it's going to happen. I happen to believe that oil will get close to hitting $100 per barrel in the not too distant future. But when you have a lot of others out there in the markets putting out projections for the price of oil, it tends to hit it to the upside and to the downside. Remember, last year we saw negative oil prices. We saw negative oil prices because there was so much supply on the market. And of course, demand completely fell off because there was lockdowns and restrictions. And so we got those negative prices, of course, for a very short period of time, but it did occur for the first time in history. Fast forward to where we are today and where we're likely headed in the future, it's almost the opposite. There's not a lot of supply on the market. A lot of companies got wiped out because they were so saturated with debt that they couldn't survive. And so they're gone. So in order for producers to come back online, those who are still standing, they're waiting for higher prices. Now they're starting to get it, but this is not a flip of a switch and you're going to have all of this supply just put back onto the market. And don't forget, this is still traded in US dollars, which is being destroyed. So you have those inflationary pressures on oil as well. Across the board. But that's another thing where people are going to focus on, because a lot of people don't like to focus on what inflation actually is, which is an increase in the money supply, but they'll look at other prices of goods and services, commodities. One of them, of course, being oil. And they'll say, oh, well, if oil prices keep going up, well, that's inflationary, and that's going to trickle through to all of these other processes across the supply chain. That's 100% true, that higher oil prices will trickle through the entire system, because energy is involved in every single process. That's why I'm saying this is just getting started. Wait till these prices tick up to 80 a barrel, which we've been flirting by. Wait till they hit 90. Can you imagine if they hit 100? Because if they do hit 100, that's where you're really going to start to see a lot of psychological effects take place. $100 a barrel oil, is that going to be coupled with a national average price of gasoline at $4 here in the U.S.? If that's the case, that's going to have a psychological and behavioral impact. Right now, people are excited and eager to get outside, to travel, to plan a vacation. They're not so concerned with price right now because they just want to go out and do something. I understand it. But one day, that'll settle down, and where are prices going to be? And if they're higher, how will people start to respond? And again, if businesses want to protect their margins, which of course they do, and they let go of more people, again, that feeds into the stagflationary environment. We have gold at $1,808 per ounce and silver at $26.08 per ounce. So gaining a little bit back from what they have lost. Again, it was just a huge knee-jerk reaction from the Federal Reserve's last meeting for a huge sell-off in precious metals, completely unfounded, completely manipulated as far as I'm concerned, but also an opportunity to purchase more gold and silver and mining stocks if you have the stomach for the volatility and you can see over the horizon and you can be a long-term investor. I think we will reap benefits. Copper at $4.35. Lumber continues its sell-off and it's now at $700 per 1,000 linear board feet. But again, being at $700, we are still well above its 30-year trading range. And that is something that we have to be mindful of, because those in the deflationist camp will say, look, you see this one price, you see that one, it's really collapsed. Okay, I don't disagree with that. It has collapsed from some of their all-time highs. But where does it stop? Where does it start to settle? Where does it find a floor? Where does it start to find its new trading range? Because at these prices, that adds an additional $24,000 to build a new home, just for the price of lumber. That's a lot of money. A lot of people don't have that. A lot of people don't have $400 in the event of an emergency. They can't come up with $400 cash. Where are they going to come up with the extra $24,000 just to build a new home just because the price of lumber? But don't pay attention to any of that stuff. That's just going to all be transitory. It's going to go away. Well, what about the people who've already had to pay the price? Are they going to get a coupon? Is somebody going to write them a check? Oh, you overpaid. Here's your money back. That ain't going to happen. And that's a lot of people, by the way. And then to round it out, we have Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note at 1.36%. So this thing has just taken a nosedive over the past few weeks. And again, we have to question, what does this mean? Federal Reserve came out a handful of months ago when yields were increasing. They said, well, that's a good thing. That's indicative of a growing economy. We're perfectly fine with this. Meanwhile, other central banks were panicking and attempting to throw more money out into the system to buy those bonds up to get the yields back down. But not us. Federal Reserve said, that's a good thing. Well, then wouldn't it mean that if yields are going down, that that's a bad thing? That means that an economic recovery is not underway? So is that something that Jay Powell is going to be asked by Congress when he goes up there, I think, what, this week or next week? To give testimony? Is he going to be asked any difficult questions? No, his ass is going to be kissed. That's how it works. No politician has the balls or the nerve to get in this guy's face and ask serious questions. No, they're going to praise him. Because the central banks right now, they're politicians' best friend. Because they don't have to go home and tell you the truth. They don't have to go home and tell you that, well, we've been irresponsible for far too long. We can't afford to continue to do this, but we're not going to let you know that. Instead, we're just going to distract you with all these cultural wars, and we're just going to make sure that sports can be put on TV so you can be entertained. That's all. We're not going to tell you about the fiscal and economic problems that we're facing. We're not going to tell you that we're the ones responsible for it. We're just going to do what we can to distract you and to send you extra stimulus checks and an extra $300 a week in unemployment benefits. Sit down and shut up. I've been telling you that's what this was for over a year. That's all it was. And of course, it's a pass-through bailout too, because all of that money that you get has to go somewhere else. You're paying off a bank, paying off a credit card, you're paying your mortgage, you're paying your rent, etc., etc. And we still have to contend with all of those moratoriums that are coming to an end as well. Yeah. So we are far from out of the woods, folks. We've printed globally some, I think, close to $30 trillion, and all it has gotten us is not even a full year. Can you imagine that? That is a ton of money, and this thing is about to collapse again. Think about that. Just to prop it up, just to make it look good, And of course, who benefits from all of this is the top 1%, who have seen their wealth increase like it's never increased before. And I am not about picking on the wealthy. I want everybody to be wealthy, but I want it to be because you have built a better mousetrap, you have worked hard, you are producing a good or service that people want, and you are out competing competition. Not because you're close to a printing press or close to politicians and they give you the money. I got a big problem with that because that's not what this country stands for. And, you know, we just celebrated this country's birthday last week. And my God, if we needed a revolution in 1776, what do you think we need now? We need a revolution and another revolution coupled with a couple miracles to pull this thing off. This is ridiculous. I'm tired of paying for all of this nonsense. What about you? Let's get to some food prices. Surging food prices fuel 40% jump in global hunger. Let's see if that's transitory. This is according to the United Nations. Acute food insecurity has soared 40% this year as recent food price hikes have exacerbated existing pressures from conflict, climate change, and the COVID-19 pandemic, according to the United Nations World Food Program, WFP. Defined as any lack of food that threatens lives, livelihoods, or both, acute food insecurity is affecting or is at high risk of affecting a record 270 million people this year, again, according to the United Nations. 270 million people. We can print trillions of dollars, but these people got to starve to death. Figure that one out. High food prices are hunger's new best friend, according to chief economist Arif Hussein. We already have conflict, climate, and COVID-19 working together. Now food prices have joined the deadly trio. And remember, folks, revolutions are fought on empty stomachs. The WFP said average wheat flour prices in Lebanon have risen 219% year-on-year amid accelerating economic turmoil. Lebanon is in complete collapse. While cooking oil prices have soared 440% versus a year ago in war devastated Syria. On internationally traded markets, world food prices were up 33.9% year-on-year in June, according to the UN Food Agency's Price Index, which measures a basket of cereals, oil seeds, dairy products, meat, and sugar. However, they did fall in June versus May, the first such decrease in 12 months, as I stated previously. After declining for several decades, world hunger has been on the rise since 2016. The WFP, which won or was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize last year, says about 690 million people, or 9% of the world's population, go to bed hungry each night. 9% of the world's population go to bed hungry each night. But hey, you're going to own nothing and you're going to like it. But hey, housing prices are going through the roof. Hey, the NASDAQ, the S&P 500, the Dow are all hitting all-time highs. Who cares about these people? It is aiming to assist the UN, the World Food Program. It is aiming to assist 139 million people this year, the biggest operation in its history. Ah, yes. Where will they ever come up with the money? I don't know. We'll see what happens. Weekly jobless claims. For the week ending July 3rd, initial claims seasonally adjusted, 373,000. Last week's figure was revised upward by 7,000 and now stands at 371,000. Again, this week, seasonally adjusted claims, 373,000. Non-seasonally adjusted claims came in at 370,000. Both are higher week over week. For the week ending June 26th, seasonally adjusted continued claims came in at 3.33 million, a week-over-week decrease of 145,000. Non-seasonally adjusted continuing claims came in at 3.2 million, a week-over-week decrease of 49,000. For the week ending July 3rd, the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, again, this is one of the children of the Nobody Cares Act, came in at 99,000. So taking our real number for weekly jobless claims closer to 500,000, where we have been stubbornly for quite a while. Still much lower than where we were, of course, several months ago. So I guess we can say that is making progress. But of course, there was always going to be a limit to how many more jobs are out there to lose. Unfortunately, we're going to find out. In aggregate, for the week ending June 19th, recall that the aggregate number lags by a couple of weeks, taking into consideration regular state, federal employees, newly discharged veterans, the PUA and PEUC programs, extended benefits, state additional benefits, and work share, gives us a grand total of 14.2 million Americans that continue to claim some form of unemployment insurance. This is a week-over-week decrease of some 450,000. This would give us a de facto unemployment rate of about 10.2%. And I'm going to have to go through the jobs report, which I did not do when that came out last Friday. So we'll have to do a podcast on that as well to talk about what that means, who does that benefit, what narrative does that feed into. And of course, it benefits the Federal Reserve because the unemployment rate ticked up. So now they can say, well, we have this dual mandate of stable prices, which they've failed horribly at, and full employment, which of course, not even close. But they'll say, well, we got to check that box. We have to get full employment back. We were 3.5% before the pandemic. We got to get back there. We have to get back there. And we're going the wrong way because the official unemployment rate went up in June. So now that's just more justification for them to continue priming the press because that's the only tool that they have. They're going to continue to do it because we're concerned about the little people. It's just an excuse, folks. You know that that is one of the biggest lies ever told. They are the creator of this massive wealth inequality, which does not bode well, historically speaking. This is just going to feed more revolutions, more protests, more riots globally and here in the United States as well. But when we look at this aggregate number, the biggest week-over-week increase was actually seen in regular state unemployment benefits, putting on a gain of 54,000. The biggest decreases week-over-week were in the PUA program, a week-over-week decrease of 111,000. In the PEUC program, a week-over-week decrease of 354,000. Now, these programs are coming to an end. And we have some states that have already stated, hey, we're done. We are not paying out this additional $300 a week or whatever it is now to people who are on unemployment. We're not doing it. We're getting too many phone calls from small businesses and everybody else that are looking for workers and can't find them. Why? Because these people are sitting at home, making just as much money, not working. It doesn't take a genius to figure this one out. They might even be making less, but they don't have to work. And they're still making enough to cover their bills because they're not doing as much stuff. They're not traveling as much, though their costs are less as well. So they're still coming out ahead. So some states are saying enough is enough. You got to go out there and find a job. Now, these programs are going to come to an end. The forbearances, the moratoriums are going to come to an end. And that is not forgiveness. All of that back rent, all those mortgages, they got to be paid. Where are the people going to come up with the money? You understand how big of a problem this is? You understand why I'm saying this is a stagflationary environment? Because your prices aren't going down. Your energy prices aren't going down. Your utility prices aren't going down. Housing prices aren't going down. And in fact, when you're looking at rent prices, rent tends to lag housing prices. Well, housing prices have gone up. So which way do you think rent is going to go up? It's going to go up. And it is. You will own nothing and you will like it. You understand this? We're not even out of the woods. We can't even see the edge of the woods on the other side. You understand this? This is just getting started. The $30 trillion in global liquidity that was thrown into the system only bought us time and made the wealthier wealthier. That's it. That's all it is. Bunch of smoke and mirrors. It's a bunch of garbage. You want to talk about a bunch of garbage? Here's garbage for you. $8.097 trillion. That is the number of the Federal Reserve. That's the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Okay? That's nice. That's a week-over-week increase of $19 billion. However, we are still just shy of an all-time high that we saw a couple of weeks ago when it was at $8.1 trillion. We're there. I mean, we're only $5 billion away. That's a drop in the bucket compared to what these idiots are doing. And, you know, if Jay Powell's before Congress, you think he wants to make it look good? You think he wants the stock market to look good while he's testifying? Of course. Of course. because that'll be something that I'm sure some of these stupid politicians will ask him or congratulate him on. Look, we got the stock market at all-time highs. Yeah, of course you do, because you're insider trading. Congressman, you love it. Of course, if you do any of that, they're going to lock you up and throw away the key. But Nancy Pelosi and her husband, they can make millions of dollars trading options on Amazon and Microsoft, knowing that, oh, well, Microsoft was going to lose a government contract with the Defense Department. Oh, but she enriched herself in that process. Oh, but there's nothing to see here. Nancy cares about you. Nancy's a genius. Nancy loves us. I mean, you got to be beyond stupid. I don't know what you're smoking, but you're smoking something if you believe that that woman cares about you. Or Joe Biden, or Kamala Harris. Or anybody in the Republican Party either. What are they doing? Are they just twiddling their thumbs, waiting for next November to say, well, we hope the Democrats destroyed themselves. And in the process, they destroyed the country too. But hey, maybe we'll get back to power so we can pretend to do nothing too in 2023. How much more do you need to see before you say enough's enough? That's all it is. Smoke and mirrors. Divide and conquer. Power. Control. Consolidation. That's what it's all about. And if you don't understand that by now, I don't know what you're paying attention to. But there you have it. Food prices, hunger, and jobless claims. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I'm Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.